Hello, this is Dr. Lisa Martin Hansen of Georgia State University, along with my colleague, Dr. Gita Verma, also of Georgia State, with the introduction of the audio file excerpts from the interview conducted last spring at the NARST conference in Baltimore, Maryland, 2008, with Dr. Robert Yeager, Professor Emeritus of Science Education at the University of Iowa. In this audio file, you will hear some of the highlights of Dr. Yeager's career in science education as it spans more than 50 years. Bob is known for his extensive work with future science educators in higher education and for promoting the research and teaching in STS, which stands for Science, Technology, and Society. We hope you enjoy these excerpts, and we encourage you to read the complete article from the Eurasia Journal of Mathematics, Science, and Technology Education. Thanks.
And been a professional teacher and whatever for much more than 50 years, actually. But I've been 50 years on the faculty at the University of Iowa. And I did my graduate work all at the University of Iowa. And so, in a sense, that was not all one stretch, because I have been teaching in Iowa, and after my first year, I should almost admit that I was a mere child. I like to say I started college when I was 2 years old. You know, it gets the year is going a different direction. Mm-hmm. But I actually decided, unlike many people that I work with in teacher education, to be a teacher when I was in seventh grade. My mother was a teacher. I grew up on a farm in Iowa. She had gone off to then the Iowa State Teachers College, which is where I went to get my degree. Everyone in Iowa, if you thought of teaching, you naturally thought of Cedar Falls.
Which is now known as
the University of Northern Iowa.
Correct.
I was also very young when I graduated from high school, actually. I was at age 20, teaching in a small town, teaching physics and biology and the English courses.
What year did you start teaching?
1 year younger than me. Here I was. And the only thing that separated me from the students, quite frankly, was my costume. I never thought of ever going into school without a suit and a tie. And I did get messed up the first year when they took pictures for the annual and all the kids came dressed up. It was rather embarrassing when the photographer stuck me in the middle of the room. I had to say, just a minute, I'm not one of the kids. First year of teaching, I immediately thought of graduate school. At that point in time, you and I, Cedar Falls, had no graduate program, strictly an undergraduate place, so I had to find another institution. And I went with my father across the state of Iowa, from western Iowa to eastern Iowa, and talked to the dean of the graduate college, who happened to be a plant physiologist, about enrolling after 1 year of teaching at on a graduate program. I just was there a summer because I was going back to teaching. All that sort of thing. But interestingly, after my first summer at Cedar Falls, I had people saying, why would you want to go back to teaching? I mean, because I did well in graduate school, which I was pleased to do. And even then, after going back, I went another second summer on a master's degree program. Without that, was drafted into the Army. So I did serve, went through basic training, all that sort of thing, against my will. And I was very thankful that my first assignment was to go to Germany rather than Korea. So I served 2 years in the Army in Frankfurt, Germany. And my job, because I had a master's degree, had been a teacher, was actually to be a teacher at a center. Was teaching Army recruits who wanted to stay in the Army, fighting to stay in the Army, and teaching them simple reading and mathematics to get at least fourth grade equivalency or they would be put out of the Army. And I was anxious to get out of the Army as soon as I could. To spend the rest of my life dealing with enzymes and what makes cells grow and elongate and all that sort of thing. didn't appeal to me at all. And would you believe, so I was looking into education. What else could I do that would keep me in the teaching business at whatever level? Another reason for staying on at Iowa was the fact that my dream was to keep doing plant physiology research. I mean, I was not unsuccessful at all. I love, see, I moved from the coleoptiles. I didn't want to do that for my PhD thesis because I wanted to be where there were other people around rather than the dark room. And so I was on floral abscission in tobacco plants. And I really was fascinated with, getting back to the lab school a little bit. It was such a rich place. Now, again, it's unique to our program was this tie to the sciences. Many of our early graduates really were preparing to be college science teachers. And I like to vainly think that was one of the greatest contributions to show that you could be interested in teaching and teaching differently at the college level instead of just giving lectures and passing it on. I was enticed to leave, and I guess there's no point in going to those places. But every time I thought about it, I'd say, look what I've got going here. Mm-hmm. I know the state. Mm-hmm. I know the university. I know the power of not having a degree in education. Mm-hmm. I know people that are willing to work with me. How long would it take to develop those kind of relationships anyplace else?
Now.
Fundamentally opposed to curriculum. And even though I took the money and probably directed 150 different NSF programs and was very enthralled with all the curriculum efforts of the 60s, and I think a lot of people want to return to that, I think it's an insult that you need a curriculum, that you need a book, and she today mentioned, the power of a textbook. And I see, in one sense, nothing wrong with it. But I think the first that we have to have are students that see that it's important to have something they can refer to. And I'd like to think, find problems with it. I'm enthralled with some research that's done, basically oftentimes in chemistry and physics, which are not my primary area, where somebody can pick up a typical high school book and find 150 errors in it.
Yes.
See, I admit that I'm not smart enough to know the difference, and obviously most teachers aren't, and probably the students certainly aren't. Nobody takes on, but they accept it as a gift from God. And so I really don't know that you can do science with a textbook. And so I don't know why we pay money to try to get more out of them. Every new curriculum come out, we would do it. The further away it was from tradition, the more we wanted to try it. So we really hadn't thought about doing anything that was completely open or in a different context. And the turning point for that for me was work with the Project Synthesis effort. And I think you may be familiar with the What Research Says series from the National Science Teachers Association. And I was instrumental because at that point in time I was president, actually, of NSTA. And work with Paul Hurd, Roger Bybee, Jane Cayley on the biology part of it was good. I mean, we shared and we pointed new directions. But the one that I was really fascinated was I had never really even heard of STS, Science, Technology, and Society. It was headed by Joe Peel from Stony Brook. And with another team, there were several teams working on synthesizing the case studies of Wayne Welch that I mentioned, with Joan Solomon, who is still alive and working. Her husband was the one that coined the phrase with Zeman, the phrase STS. And I got very fascinated in what it means, what it could be. And I'd like to think that's what the current reforms are all about. Certainly. I loved, surely you're joking, Mr. Feynman, Feynman's whole idea of what science is, and I always hope to practice it and use it, that really science is trying to respond to your own questions, and to your own questions, and that scientists are doing that. I mean, we tend to revere them. They know it all. Well, hell, they're not doing research if they already know the answer. And they're sharing with you their previous answers, maybe. But the bottom of it is dealing with those things. And I loved it when AAAS Science Journal came out, the 125 most significant, it was the 125th birthday or something of the things that we don't know. And but where do we deal in typical, especially if you got a textbook, if you got a state curriculum guide, whatever else, with the things that the student doesn't know? You're not doing it. And then he said the second kind, and I use this here with NARST at several occasions, was it also is dealing with things that you know that aren't so. Now I really have to get that on there. John Duncase is one who I, in just this year, going down the hall, and he looked so glum. I said, "John, what's wrong? You look so sad." He said, "I just found out today that two of the things that I knew yesterday that I don't know." And so I kind of like to do that. But how many times has that really happened? Mm-hmm. So we even joke about that now. Mm-hmm. But the third kind. He said, Feynman said, the third thing that scientists deal with are the things that they don't know, and they don't even know that they don't know them. Right. Mm-hmm. And he called it the vast infinity of things. So it's all, we haven't begun to understand everything of the whole universe. We don't even know how big it is and where it all goes. Mm-hmm. And all that fun, we miss the point of what science is. Mm-hmm. And I think I got very fascinated with it, and still am. I love plants and trying to understand how they grow. And so my thought was, I could be in the lab school, and I could keep some abscission research. And I, you know, I have, I don't know, 12 or 15 in the most prestigious journal of plant physiology. And so
didn't understand
what many of us are trying to do, how we defined SDS. Mm-hmm. And many people have, in my opinion, defined it wrong. They're just adding a chapter on the book dealing with some issue. Mm-hmm. The issue doesn't become the organizer for the course.
Exactly.
And probably, and I would say the people that say they're doing SDS with a textbook, mm-hmm. or that they have a unit at the end, it's a tack-on thing. They're missing the point, even though they claim to be SDS, they're missing the point of its value, too.
Well, I'm glad.
I think it's fine. I mean, my bias is that we've been interested in that. In fact, being interested in social issues is what turned a lot of initial people off. As a matter of fact, they said, "You're not teaching science unless you do have a physics course or whatever." And so we were criticized for being too far out. Now some of these people, I mean, they have written articles on beyond STS. Well, I mean, let's go beyond the sun. To me, it's almost like, who was it? It was somebody from Berkeley too, Roth, that wrote an article against STS because it has nothing to do with learning theory and constructivist practices. Well, so we responded to that in the SUNY Monograph a little bit. Lutz did, you know, saying, "Well, you don't understand STS," and that's what I kind of say. If you want to, let's go beyond. I'm willing to go beyond it. I mean, And there's nothing wrong with taking that a little step further to moral values and sociocultural. I believe, and see, you could argue, well, you're just hanging on to an old idea. I mean, in one sense, but those things aren't alien to what STS is about. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is that many people view STS in a curricular sense only, and there's some who look upon it that way. And to me, the far greater way of looking at STS is a new way of teaching. Mm-hmm. And I like to say that that's why the teaching standards are first in the standards, because it's the most important thing, mm-hmm. to view what you do as a teacher in a different way than just transmitting information or following the curriculum or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And if we want to, again, I don't have any quarrel with any of them moving into this socio-cultural area. I'd say ideally, STS people should be doing it. I mean, Joel McShane was doing that. Jim was doing it in Denison, Iowa. Mm-hmm. But in their mind, they view STS to be a little S, not too far with it, and tying a little design world in, but for no reason. And then and Bill Aldrich would go nuts with the word society. So, I mean, the attack was from many of the scientists for STS, and that's what terms in and of themselves don't have meaning. Mm-hmm. We give them meaning. Yeah. And I guess in terms of these kinds of conflicts, I just say, well, we haven't specified enough. Mm-hmm. What it, I mean, I don't know how many people really deal with the term, with even the term science or technology. Many of these people assume right up front that when you say science, you mean understanding rocks better, mm-hmm. or knowing what the living system is, mm-hmm. or whatever else. And so there's just as much disagreement. And I think most linguistics experts will agree no term has any meaning until meaning is first established. Mm-hmm. And sure. so it's our fault, in a way, that we have not been able to delineate very well. Is exploration of the material universe, seeking explanation for the objects and events encountered. Mm-hmm. So that means anything that you encounter, objects and events, covers almost everything. And I sometimes jokingly too say it just leaves out heaven and hell, or places you haven't been yet. You don't even know that they exist at the edge of the universe. And then with technology, right now, one of my bone of contention is that too many people, just as a little bit Marsha was today, that it is dealing with educational technology. And to me, the simple definition is it's dealing with the design world, the human-made world. You know, we make bridges, it gets the engineers in. And I think we were dead wrong in the 60s saying, leave out the technology. Now we're saying it's science and technology. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I think that's the reason I even like the word STS, because we science and technology up front. Now a lot of people will ignore one or the other. And I like society in, because it is people and their brain at work, and they're people working with each other or fighting each other. All these are ways that we increase where we're going. I love... And certainly our program changed over those years as well. Mm-hmm. And see, many of the early ones, like I mentioned, there have been five of them that were on the science faculty at UNI. And many of them went to college. And I am proud of that, although, mm-hmm. quite frankly, people like Fletcher Watson at Harvard, I was criticized for that, for some of the leading science educators, because science education, leaders in NARST, was meant to prepare teacher preparers, and you know, part of research in science education done by researchers, not tied to schools. And here was a large program in Iowa that was preparing people that weren't going to be, you know, primarily science education researchers. But see, I don't like to separate science education research from action research by teachers, whatever else. I think the mind, regardless of where you are, there should be questions and you should be dealing with them. So that was a hard one to swallow. NARST as an organization used to be a fraternity, sorority sort of thing. I mean, you were invited to join NARST. Mm. That's one of the first things that T.R. Porter did, you know, try to get me in, and of course he was in, and it was run. I mean, and even as late as 19, what was it, I don't know, maybe it was the late 70s or 80s, that there were only 35 institutions in this U.S. that had a doctoral program with more than five students. See, the JRST is relatively new, mainly because the old one, Science Ed, was the property of, what was the name? I mean, it became an old man, and it was personal, and so then they sold it. We had some good people who became editors. Now it looks like a competing journal by the same publisher. but they got their own person. That's the reason it was set up for five-year terms, that sort of thing. So nobody, and they literally, they sold Science Ed. The widow of, I've forgotten his name, sold it to Ed Bingham at the University of Florida was the first editor of the newly purchased journal. So there have been a lot of changes just in terms of growing up and being more professional and more inclusive. And the highest of the pyramid to me is collaboration. Mm-hmm. True collaboration means everybody, mm-hmm. not somebody on top telling other people. Mm-hmm. And the teacher in a building is oftentimes that guilty person, fighting the other departments, mm-hmm. wanting more time. Why is NARST as an organization reaching out more than it does? Too many people, even at this meeting so far, have, you know, I wouldn't go to NSTA meeting or blah, 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 blah. And I don't know that you need to go. But we all need each other, I'd like to think. And the goodness again is nobody is against education. Nobody is against teaching. But what is it that are our common goals? What are we after? I love the Wiggins and McTighe book, you know, Backward Design, you know, where you're forced to come to agreement with Coles, and you then are forced into what kinds of things, what kind of evidence would there be that the goal has been met? And I don't see many people debating that. Too many people think they know the answer already.
Well, you've